Welcome, everybody, to On This Day on the Grilly Truth Sports Network. And today we're going to look at January 18th, 1976. The Pittsburgh Steelers beat the Dallas Cowboys in Super Bowl X, 21-17. Now, for all the gaudy things that happened throughout that afternoon, January 18th, 1976, memories of that Super Bowl will always go back to Pittsburgh's Lynn Swann climbing into the air like the boy on an Indian rope trick and coming down with the football. He didn't even come down with very many passes on that Sunday, really only four, but he caught the ones that truly mattered. That is why it will seem that he spent the day way up there in the crispy sky, 1,000 feet above Miami's Orange Bowl, where neither the Dallas Cowboys nor even a squadron of fighter planes could have done anything to stop him. When it was all over, Lynn Swann and the Pittsburgh Steelers had won their second straight Super Bowl with a 21-17 win over the Dallas Cowboys. Now, the thinking beforehand was that Pittsburgh could win this game only if Franco Harris, Rocky Blyer trampled over and through a thing called the flex defense of the intellectual Dallas Cowboys led by Tom Landry, who in the meantime on offense would do enough weird things to the hard hat Steelers to capture the day and write a perfect finish to their storybook season. Essentially, Dallas stopped Harris. However, and the winning of Super Bowl X was left up to Lynn Swann and the indomitable Terry Bradshaw, who seemed to collect concussions and championship rings with equal facility. Now, just for good measure, there was also a defense that could probably take apart an attacking tank battalion if it had to, but mainly it was Swann keeping Pittsburgh in a game that looked to be swaying early on towards the underdog Dallas Cowboys. It was Swann soaring above the Cowboys' Mark Washington at the sideline, who fielded a Bradshaw pass of 32 yards and made the drive that put Pittsburgh back into contest late in the first quarter. Until then, Dallas had done everything but cause the Orange Bowl floats to disappear. And in the fourth quarter, it was Swann who made the biggest catch of the day, a 64-yard touchdown heave from Bradshaw, who didn't realize until much later after his head stopped rattling that he had passed for a touchdown. This was the play that put the Steelers safely ahead 21-10. Only a few impossible last-minute deeds by the Cowboys could have changed the outcome of Super Bowl X, and though they were dead game and scored one more touchdown, they were just not quite good enough to pull this off. Now, that last catch of Swann's had to be dwelled on, for it had Super Bowl trophy and $15,000 to each Steeler written all over it. That there was so much to the play, so much that could have happened, and so much that did. It ended with Swann catching a rocket from Bradshaw that traveled at least 70 yards in the air. Swann jumping and taking it on the Dallas 5-yard line and gliding in for the touchdown. And Bradshaw barely conscious off the ground after being decked by Cliff Harris on a safety blitz. For those who collect trivia, the name of that play was 69 Maximum Flanker Post. The play began with the Steelers trying to protect a 15-10 lead with just over 3 minutes left in the game. It was third down and four at the Steelers 36, and Dallas wanted the ball badly. There was still plenty of time for Roger Staubach and Drew Pearson to conjure up some of that witchcraft they used a few weeks earlier to upset the Minnesota Vikings on the Hail Mary play in Minnesota's Metropolitan Stadium. Perhaps we'll never know what possessed Bradshaw to call 69 Maximum Flanker Post when the world had a right to expect Pittsburgh to try only for the first down, the percentage move to keep the ball. It may be that Bradshaw is not as dumb as it had always been numbingly popular for his biggest critics to suggest. One can certainly say he remembered Swann at just the right time. So instead of giving the ball to Franco Harris or Rocky Blyer, Bradshaw faded back to throw the long one. A wild gamble, it appeared. Alas, Dallas had figured it properly. The blitz was on, and D.D. Lewis came storming at Bradshaw from his blind side with Cliff Harris right behind him. For a fleeting instant, it seemed that Lewis would reach the quarterback before he could release the ball, causing either a sack or a fumble that could change the entire game. But Bradshaw, possibly just sensing Lewis, took a step to his right. Lewis missed him by a hair. That gave Bradshaw just enough time to unload the pass. In the next instant, Cliff Harris destroyed Bradshaw with a whack. And the 80,000 people in the stadium might have heard it if their attention had not been turned at a flight of the ball and the blur of Swann's foot race with the Cowboys' Mark Washington. Washington will have to live with the knowledge that he covered Swann as well as anyone could have possibly done, but he could not leap as high or as deftly at the right time. Finally, it was a beautifully thrown ball a perfectly run pass route, and a marvelous catch. All three at the most splendid time for Pittsburgh, and in the most important football game of the season. Players who were involved in such heroics seldom have much to say afterwards that would give them some meaning. Swan said, "All I did was run under the ball." He thought for a moment and figured there must be more to it than that. He remembered it earlier, referring to another pass. Cliff Harris had told him, "You're lucky you didn't come back on that ball, because I'm going to take a shot at you. You better watch your head." Intimidation. The Cowboys had planned to be intimidating in this game, something the Steelers are famous for. And the Cowboys were at first, not just with their tricks and execution, but with enough hard hitting that they led 10-7 through 3-4 quarters of play. Swan's head was as much a factor as his hands and speedy legs. It was not even known whether he would be able to play in the Super Bowl because of a mild concussion he suffered in the American Conference title game against the Oakland Raiders. And Chuck Knoll later, or Lynn Swan later on, went to say, "I honestly didn't know until a couple minutes before the kickoff whether I'd play. I felt fine and I wanted to, but I wasn't sure I would." Coach Chuck Knoll was sure, just as sure as he was that the Steelers could not beat the Cowboys without throwing. As for Bradshaw, he could only try to recall what reality was like. "I get hit right here," he said, pointing to his left cheek. "They were coming. I could feel them coming. I don't know how I got the ball off. I was hearing bells or something on the ground." Bradshaw did not know what he had wrought. People bent over him as he lay there, but he wasn't hearing them. They told him when they led him to the sideline. They told him when they sat him down. And a couple minutes later, they were telling him again that he had done this terrific thing as they walked him towards the dressing room. "I was in the locker room, and the game was just about over when I finally understood it," said Bradshaw. There were enough heroic events throughout the game to daze even the most ardent fans. Dallas took a 7-0 lead, the touchdown resulting from a blunder on the part of Bobby Walden, the Steelers' punter. He had a good snap from center, and he simply dropped it. The Cowboys' rush blanketed him, and it was Dallas' ball at the Steelers' 29. In one play, the Cowboys score, and the way they did it suggested that Coach Tom Landry had something very sinister in store for the Steelers the rest of the afternoon. Drew Pearson ran a crossing pattern over the middle, and it was wide open. Staubach laid the ball in beautifully, and it was 6 points. The Steelers' safety, Mike Wagner, who claimed the fault was his because he misread the play, would have his revenge later. Pittsburgh tied it up at 7, with Bradshaw starting on his 33 and giving the ball to Harris and Blyer, who nibbled away to the Dallas 48. Then came a 32-yard pass to Swan down the right sideline, on which he made his first award-winning catch of the day. One more carry each by Blyer and Harris to the Dallas 7, and finally a scoring pass to tight end Randy Grossman. Dallas came back with a field goal by Tony Fritsch to go into the lead 10-7. It could have been 10-10 at the half, but Pittsburgh's Roy Girella missed a field goal that wasted Swan's next sensational performance, a tumbling jungling catch of a 53-yard Bradshaw bomb. It was not until the fourth quarter that either team scored again. This time it was 2 points for Pittsburgh as Reggie Harrison flashed in to block Mitch Hoop's punt, slamming the ball out of the end zone for a safety. Dallas led 10-9. The Steelers finally went ahead when Girella, who by then had missed another field goal, knocked one through from the 26-yard line. So, the Steelers led the game 12-10 with less than a half of the final quarter to play when Wagner got his revenge. Staubach dropped back for his 15 to try the same type of pass Drew Pearson had caught earlier for the touchdown. Wagner reacted as if he and Staubach had concocted the play together. He lurked just out of Pearson's sight, and when the ball arrived, Wagner slipped in front of him, picked it off, and went screaming down to the Dallas 7. To the credit of the Dallas Cowboys' doomsday defense, it held the Steelers to Girella's second field goal, but Pittsburgh was now ahead 15-10 and never lost that lead. Next came Swan's dramatic touchdown catch to make it 21-10, followed by a Staubach pass to Percy Howard of 34 yards, which concluded the scoring at 21-17. As for all the mischief in the waning moments of the game, it started when the Steelers decided to use up time by running on fourth down instead of punting. But the clock stopped when Dallas took over near midfield, leaving 1:22 to play and giving Staubach and Pearson an excellent chance to produce one of their old miracles. The Steelers' weird decision may best be explained by a little scene that was taking place in a booth upstairs. A frantic Pittsburgh assistant coach began hollering at Art McNally, the NFL supervisor of officials. From the opposite side of a plexiglass divider covered with brown paper, he shouted something to the order of, "The clock stopped, McNally. Hey, McNally, they're not running the clock." To which McNally calmly replied, "The clock always stops when the ball changes hands." Evidently, the Steelers' brain trust was so pleased that Dallas had used up all of its timeouts on defense that they had forgotten a rule. And now they could only be aghast at their own folly. And that is really what gave Dallas its last chance to take the game back from Lynn Swann and the Steelers. Even without the excitement on the field, there were enough trappings to make the game memorable. For one thing, it was surely the first time a press box ever had Raquel Welch hanging around in it. But the Cowboys, apparently determined to start things off with a flare, had the audacity to run a reverse on the opening kickoff. Preston Pearson handed the ball off to Thomas Hollywood Henderson, an ebullient special teams rookie, and after Henderson had galloped 48 yards right past the Steelers' bench, everyone knew this was going to break the mold of the previous 9 Super Bowls of the past. Dallas started off right, doing things that enraged the Steelers' emotional leader, middle linebacker Jack Lambert. "They mess up your head too much," Lambert had said before the game. "If they beat you, you feel like you've been tricked instead of beaten. I hate teams like that." For most of the afternoon, Lambert looked as if he hated everything and everybody in white. The Steelers didn't draw a penalty the entire game. But it was not because Lambert didn't try, particularly on one very visible occasion where Roy Jarrell had missed a field goal in the second quarter. Dallas's Cliff Harris was so pleased by this development that he slapped Lambert on the helmet and then said thank you to Jarella. No one could tell whether it was a playful pat on Lambert's helmet, but they did see Lambert grab Harris and throw him down. Referee Norm Schechter stepped in and began moving Lambert backwards, warning him that he had better cool off. "I smiled," Lambert said, thereby revealing a facet of his character heretofore well masked. This was the same Lambert who had earned a reputation of being the best and the meanest of the game's linebackers, and it's the same Lambert who mentioned he did not like the place where the Steelers were headquartered in Miami as compared to where the Cowboys were staying, which was at a beachfront hotel in Fort Lauderdale. "I hope the Sharks eat Roger Staubach," said Lambert before the game. In the end, it wasn't the Sharks that got Roger Staubach, but the Pittsburgh Steelers' defense. Some of the old heroes of the front four, like L.C. Greenwood, Dwight White, led the assault that sacked Staubach 7 times. That happened to be a Super Bowl record at the time, as was the 161 yards that Swann accumulated on these 4 receptions. Just as important, Staubach was harassed considerably on a few other occasions and could not move his team as successfully as he had been able to in the early going. It was somewhat in character for the Cowboys not to realize what a spectacle the game had been. They reacted to the loss with a humor and graciousness that reflects Tom Landry's control of his squad. "I don't care what kind of a guy or what kind of a catch a guy makes if he beats me," Washington said. "Swann just beat me 1 too many." Staubach said, "We had our chances. Overall, Pittsburgh is the best, but it was a good season." "Was it exciting?" Gene Fugit said. "I guess it was. I guess maybe we can't play a dull game." And neither could Lynn Swann. And the combination of Dallas being there and Swann rising to the occasion, up, up and away, made it something for everybody in Miami to take home and think about until the next year. Was this Super Bowl dull? No. And it was probably the first one out of the first 10 that was actually a great football game. And people forget the Dallas Cowboys were supposed to be in rebuilding mode in 1975. It slipped into the playoffs as a wild card, had upset the Vikings on a miracle Hail Mary pass to Drew Pearson, with a couple questionable calls built in there along the way. And then they went to L.A. and beat the Rams 37-7 in L.A., and they were supposed to lose that game. So, on this day, January the 18th, 1976, the Pittsburgh Steelers win their second consecutive Super Bowl with a 21-17 win over the Dallas Cowboys in the classic Super Bowl X. So, remember, once again, you can hear On This Day every day on the Grueling Truth Sports Network. So for now, I'm Mike Goodpaster. You've been listening to The Grueling Truth, where the legends...
Discover...